Being diagnosed with cancer can be a challenging journey, but it doesn't have to define you. Listen to this fascinating story of one survivor's journey to excellence after a melanoma diagnosis. It will inspire you to keep moving forward and live your best life. Hello, and welcome to Sailing Through Life. I'm Lori, your host and friend. Join me as I share conversations that give you hope through the storms of life. You'll find inspiration through the experiences of my guests, as well as hearing my own crazy, wonderful adventure. Create the life you desire by discovering new ways to focus on your health and well-being through modifying your habits and improving your mindset. Set sail with me on this journey to realize the strength and resilience you have inside. Let us show you how as you sail through life. Welcome aboard. Thank you for sharing your time with me today in this special series for skin cancer and melanoma awareness. You are so important to me, and I'm grateful that you are here to join us. I hope to continue to inspire you every day. Want to be a part of the crew? Support us by sharing this with your friends and family and by making a contribution financially. It'll help us continue to grow the show. You can learn more at sailingthroughlifepodcast.com. Cancer is a diagnosis that can shatter even the strongest among us. Facing an illness like this can make us question our purpose and our ability to withstand the physical and the emotional challenges that come with it. My guest, Terry Tucker, is an inspiring survivor. He's faced a rare form of melanoma that was originally diagnosed in 2012. Despite being given a low chance of survival, Terry persevered after surgeries and treatments. He believes that going through this adversity teaches us something that makes us better human beings. This incredible speaker and man of many talents now finds his purpose in sharing his story and inspiring others to push beyond their self-imposed limits. We'll dive deeper into how Terry overcame his adversity by facing it with positive mindset and sheer grit. I'd like to welcome my guest today, someone who has been such a blessing and inspiration to me personally, someone who's been there for me and has encouraged me to do a lot of what I've done. This person is such a treasure. So I want to welcome my guest today, Terry Tucker. Thank you so much, Terry, for being here with us.
Well, Lori, that was very kind of you to say, and thank you for having me again. I'm really looking forward to talking to you.
So I thought of you because I know you're really into the quotes of the day and things that are motivational. And I found a quote that I think resonates with your story. It is, "Excellence is never an accident. It's always the result of high intention, sincere effort, and intelligent execution. It represents the wise choice of many alternatives. Choice, not chance, determines your destiny," by Aristotle.
I thought I recognized that quote.
I figured you would.
Yeah, Aristotle, the Stoics. I love the Stoics. I think the first time we spoke, I had not read, I might have read Marcus Aurelius's Meditations, but I hadn't read some of the other books and that. And I just, I love this stuff. You know, I love the way it's not about you, you know, that the focus is bigger than just you. And that is, that's something I've been thinking a lot about lately, that, you know, we tend to feel that we are born empty and that our goal or our purpose is to, you know, whenever we get out of high school or college or the military, whatever we do, whenever we get into life, that our purpose is to fill ourselves up, to take this empty vessel and fill ourselves up. I got to get a great job. I got to make a lot of money. I got to have a nice car. I got to have a nice house. I got to have all this stuff. But I think it's just the opposite. I think it's not about being empty and filling ourselves up. I think it's we're born full. And our job is to empty ourselves out for the betterment of ourselves, our family, our friends, our community, our creator, our world. And it's just a different way of looking at things these days.
Yeah, I agree. There's a lot of distorted perceptions on what you're entitled to, and life's not guaranteed. And obviously we know that since you're here today talking to us on this episode in melanoma and skin cancer awareness, we see how quickly things can change, and you have the opportunity then to shift your mindset and really understand better what it is you're doing and put more focus and purpose into that. So that's something that I know we've talked about before, and I really appreciate that conversation with you.
Yeah, I think mindset, controlling your mind is really incredibly important, because we all become what we think. And I remember there was a basketball coach when I was growing up. I grew up in Chicago, and there was a basketball coach at the University of Indiana by the name of Bobby Knight. And Knight had a quote that went, "Mental is to physical as 4 is to 1. So here's this, you know, great coach teaching elite athletes to use their bodies to be great basketball players on the court. But what he was really saying with that quote is that your mind or your mindset is 4 times more important than anything your physical body is going to do. You know, if you can't control your mind, it's going to be awful difficult for you to do or get the things that you want out of life. And I'm reminded, you know, being a basketball player, and for those who don't know, I'm 6'8" tall, and I played college basketball at the Citadel in Charleston, South Carolina. And I remember being told that, and I have researched since that, you know, if I took a basketball and I went out on the court and I practiced, let's say, shooting free throws, there would be a certain part of my brain that would engage. If we could look at it under an MRI, that would light up. But if I thought about taking that basketball, going out on that court and shooting those and practicing those free throws, that exact same area of my brain would light up. So whether I physically did it or whether I thought about doing it, I'm engaging. I'm wiring a part of my brain. So I always tell people, I mean, we all talk to ourselves, whether we like to admit it or not, but be careful how you talk to yourself. Because if you continually tell yourself, you know, I'm not good enough, or I'm bad at, I can never do this, I'll never get through this, you're hardwiring your brain to do that. And I've had people, I don't know about you, Laura, in your experience, but I've had people come up to me and say, you know, Terry, I could never do, you know, your cancer experience, I could never do what you did. Depending on the kind of mood I'm in, sometimes I'm a little bit of a smart aleck. You know, I'll say to them, yeah, you're right, you can't, you couldn't, because you've already decided in your own mind, you've already defeated yourself, that you couldn't do this. So, you know, my advice to people who go into things with that attitude is more of a, well, that's great, but my suggestion is just to sleep in. Because if you're already going to defeat yourself, why even try? Just get a good night's sleep and sleep in that morning, and that way you don't have to worry about failing.
Yeah, avoid the whole issue.
Yeah.
Yeah, whether you think you can or you can't, you're right.
Exactly.
So we have a little bit of a history, and this is a pretty poignant day for me to have you here, because the last time we spoke was episode 11. And so today, this is episode 111. And I know so much has probably transpired in those few episodes. And I really want to establish your story and really get into what has transpired over that 100 episodes and get caught up. So if we can just go to your history with melanoma.
Yeah, I have a rare form of melanoma. This was back in 2012 when I was diagnosed, so almost 11 years now, that I had a callus break open on the bottom of my foot, right below my third toe. And at the time, I was coaching girls' high school basketball in Texas, so I didn't think much of it when it occurred. But after a few weeks of it not healing, I made an appointment, went to see a podiatrist, a foot doctor friend of mine. And he took an x-ray and he said, Terry, I think you have a little cyst in there and I can cut it out. And he did. And he showed it to me, just a little gelatin sac with some white fat in it, no dark spots, no blood, nothing that gave either one of us concern. But fortunately or unfortunately, he sent it off to pathology to have it looked at. And then 2 weeks later, I received that call that any of us who've ever had cancer just absolutely dread. And like I said, he was a friend of mine. And so the more difficulty he was having explaining to me what was going on, the more frightened I was becoming, until finally he just laid it out for me. He said, Terry, I've been a doctor for 25 years. I have never seen the form of cancer that you have. You have this rare form of melanoma that appears on the bottom of the feet or the palms of the hands. And because my cancer was so uncommon, he recommended I go to MD Anderson Cancer Center in Houston and be treated. And so I did. I had, you know, the tumor on the bottom of my foot cut out. I had all the lymph nodes in my groin removed. But at the time, melanoma was a death sentence. Mm-hmm. My wife and I were just talking the other day that when I was first diagnosed, my oncologist pulled her out of the room and said, you know, he's probably not going to live more than 5 years, tops. Is he going to be okay with that? And she said, no, I kind of laughed at her like, you have no idea who you're dealing with. So yeah, go ahead and tell him that and see how he reacts. And so she put me on a drug called interferon because there were no therapies. There was nothing to do for, you know, it wasn't like I can give you chemo or I can give you a certain drug. There was nothing. So she put me on a drug called interferon to help keep the disease from coming back. And the side effects with the interferon for me was that I had severe flu-like symptoms for 2 to 3 days every week after each injection. And I took those weekly injections for almost 5 years. So imagine having the flu every week for 5 years. And as my oncologist said, that's not a cure, Terry. We're just trying to kick the can down the road and buy you some more time. 5 years of interferon eventually became so toxic in my body that I ended up in the intensive care unit with a fever of 108 degrees, which is usually not compatible with being alive. Somehow we survived that. But I had to stop the interferon, and the cancer came back almost immediately in the exact same spot on my foot where it had presented 5 years earlier. That necessitated the amputation of my left foot in 2018. Cancer worked its way up my leg into my shin, two more surgeries in 2019. And then in 2020, an undiagnosed tumor kind of in my ankle area grew large enough that it fractured my tibia, my shin bone. And my only recourse right in the middle of the global pandemic was to have my left leg amputated above the knee. And I also found out I had tumors in my lungs, which I'm currently being treated for. And Laurie, I know this sounds really dark and ugly, and it certainly has been, but I'll tell you two things I've learned from this. Number one, I don't think you really know yourself until you've been tested by some form of adversity in your life. Mm-hmm. Number two, I think cancer has made me a better human being.
That's a hard pill to swallow for a lot of people, thinking that something that traumatic happened and something good came out of it.
You know, in a way it is, but at the same time, you know, I'm, you know, the older I get, the more I go through this, the more I realize that the people that have been put in my life, the people or the circumstances that have been put in my life are not there by happenstance. Mm-hmm. They happen for a reason. You know, I've met people for a reason. I don't know that reason sometimes. But these things that happen to us, I think are designed to teach us something. And if we're smart enough to go through this ugliness and come out the other side, I think it's incumbent upon us to figure out what did we learn from that. And I'll tell you a quick story. I had a nurse, when I get treated every 3 weeks now for the tumors of my lungs, and this nurse, fairly young woman, about 25. And when I met her, she was already a nurse, but she was learning how to do things on the unit where I get treated. And about 8 months later, she was taking care of me by herself. And she came in and she said, Terry, I've got this story I want to tell you, but I'm a little uncomfortable telling it to you. And I didn't really know how to respond to that. I said, well, right. It sounds like it might be a good story that I would like to hear. I hope you decide you want to tell it to me. She's in and out for the next couple hours. And then finally comes in, sits down on the bed and said, all right, here's the deal. She said, when I first met you, she said, I was going to get out of nursing. I'd had a very good friend of mine that had passed away. I was in a really dark place. I talked to my mom and dad. I was going to quit nursing. I was going to go to work for Amazon. But she said, and then I met you. And I see what you go through every day when you come here for treatment. And then I went back and I read your story, all the things that you've had. And she said, when I finished that, I knew I was where I was supposed to be. Hmm. Now, if she would have never told me that story, I would have had no idea that my life had had a positive impact on her. You know, and we all kind of get into this situation where we think, you know, oh, woe is me, you know, life is terrible and stuff like that. And yet people look at us and see confidence, see how we're handling this ugliness that we're dealing with and are just amazed at how we do it. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we feel sorry for ourselves and other people look at us like, wow, that's an incredibly confident individual. it's two people looking at the exact same situation in two entirely different ways. So I always tell people that I don't care how bad things are. I guarantee you there's people out there watching how you handle it and would give anything that they have just to spend 5 minutes walking in your shoes.
And that brings up an interesting question for you is, what is the biggest inspiration for you? What inspires you? What ignites you?
You know, at this point in time, I really think it's the ability to come on podcasts and talk with people like you. I have this constant disagreement. I don't know what the word I want to use with my wife, because I have 2 weeks off during which I'm supposed to heal, where I'm supposed to get my blood counts back up and rest and things like that. And there are days when I'll do three or four podcasts, where I'll be a guest on three or four podcasts. And my wife is always like, you need to rest. You need to take it easy. But Lori, this energizes me. This gives me purpose. This makes me feel like I'm engaged with life, even though I rarely go out of the house except for my therapies and my treatments, because I have tumors in my lungs, and you know, getting COVID or the flu or something like that could potentially be fatal.
Right.
So it, you know, I sort of joke with my wife, look, I get plenty of rest when I'm dead. So you know what? let's just keep going with this to give me a sense of purpose. But I hope what I'm able to give other people is the sense of you can do more than you think you can.
Mm-hmm.
You know, no matter how bad things are, there's a reason for what's happening to you. Learn that reason and find a way to move forward. That's my message of hope, my message of you can do this, and not, oh, you know, woe is me, things are terrible.
Right. Yeah. One of my favorite quotes is, you never know how strong you are until strong is your only option.
Yeah. Isn't that the truth?
Yeah. You put it in your mind that you have this, I can get to this point. After that, probably not. But you limit yourself, and it's hard not to do, because I think you reference past experiences and you see things all the time around you where people can only get so far. And it's this type of platform where we get to share stories with people and inspire them that regardless of what you are going through, you can get much further than you think. You limit yourself, and there's a lot more potential out there. And it's hard. It's hard because especially when you're talking about something health related, it does a number on you.
Yeah, it really does. And I, when I was in college, I went to a military college similar to West Point, Air Force Academy, Naval Academy, that kind of thing. And I remember 1 year we had a president of the college by the name of James Bond Stockdale. And Admiral Stockdale had been a fighter pilot in the Vietnam War and was actually shot down and was a prisoner of war in the famous Hanoi Hilton for 8 years. For 8 years, he was tortured. He was beaten. He disfigured himself so that the Vietnamese could not use him as propaganda. And I didn't have a lot of interaction with him, but I remember I was at an event with him one time and somebody asked him, who were the people that survived that ordeal? And he said, well, let me tell you who didn't survive it. He said, it wasn't the big, tall, strong, tough guys that thought they could handle any kind of abuse or torture, because you give human beings enough time, they'll find a way to break people. And mm-hmm. he said, those people didn't survive. He said, it wasn't even the optimists that survived. He said, because they were the people who said, you know, we're going to be released or rescued by Thanksgiving or Christmas or Easter. And Thanksgiving and Christmas and Easter would come and go, and they would die of a broken heart because they weren't released. He said, the people that survived were the people that figured out what they could control and could controlled. And he said, and for us, it was basically the thoughts in our mind and our breathing. Everything else was at the discretion of the Viet Cong. When we ate, when we slept, when we went to the bathroom, when we got tortured, when we got beaten, everything was at their discretion. He said, so the people that survived were the people that figured out what they could control and controlled it. And for him, he said, you know, our breathing and our thoughts. So mm-hmm. if you take that now to us, I mean, most of us aren't confined. Most of us aren't beaten every day and things like that. Imagine what you can control in your life, which a lot of times, especially when you're in an illness, is not a lot.
Right.
But what can you control, and how do you go about controlling that?
What would you say is the most scared you've been in this this journey of being diagnosed with melanoma?
I think it was, honestly, initially, you know, I think I went through when I was given this, you know, I was living my life like everybody else was. You know, I was a dad, I was a husband, you know, I was coaching basketball, I had my own school security consulting business, and then bang, I get hit with, you've got cancer. And I think I'm pretty sure I went through all the emotions that we would associate with grief. You know, first it was denial. I can't possibly have cancer. I've done everything right in my life. And then you get mad. And then you get, you know, I did. Our daughter was in high school at the time. It was bargaining with God. Hey, look, just let me live long enough to see her graduate from high school. You know, and then you get, at least I did, you get down. You get a little depressed.
Mm-hmm.
And then you come out the other end and it's like, now I'm mad. I'm fired up. I'm like, okay, this sucks, but I'm going to have to embrace the suck. You know,
right.
I don't like these cards that I've been dealt, but I'm going to have to play them to the best of my ability. And so it was really, am I going to live long enough to see my daughter graduate from high school? And not only have I seen her graduate from high school, I've seen her graduate from college. I used my prosthetic leg to walk her down the aisle when she got married a little over a year ago.
Hmm.
And so I've been lucky. I've been incredibly fortunate. But it was the fear of I wouldn't be there for our daughter, you know, as she was growing up. And I mean, to lose a parent at any time is hard, but to lose it when you're in high school, you know, when you're going through all the physical, emotional changes of, you know, your body and your mind and stuff, I thought, oh, no, please, let me at least be there for that.
Right.
But there's no guarantee, you know? I mean, God could have said, no, don't think so. She'll figure it out. You're coming home. I'm like, okay.
That whole thought process that happens when you're contemplating all these things, it can just totally suck the life out of you. And it's catching yourself and writing that and feeling it, but not getting stuck in it. And that's something that even I still fight with. You know, it's like you don't ever feel like you're free from this diagnosis in a lot of ways, and it's hard not to carry it through everything. And it's a structure thing that you have to kind of compartmentalize it sometimes, because it bleeds into everything, and you try to not let it be the whole thing of you.
You're right. Yeah. I mean, this disease for us can isolate us, you know, I think initially from our friends and then from our family and even from ourselves, you know, and that isolation gives you time to get in your own head, to let the demons creep in to your thoughts and think about all the negative things, all the bad things that could possibly happen in your life. And if you let those happen, you know, you can get, as you said, you can get overwhelmed by them. And now all of a sudden you're not really living your life, you're just existing. And I certainly felt that during that 5-year period I was on interferon. I always felt there was a difference between living and not dying. Mm-hmm. And I felt so much that I was in that not dying part of life. And I remember several times being so sick of being sick that I just was praying to God. It's like, look, just take me. Just get me out of here. This is not living. This is just trying to survive from one day to the next. And sometimes that survival was, I got to get out of bed and I got to make it to the couch. That to me was a good day. That was something positive that I could hang on to. And I know that sounds ridiculous, but you know, when you are that sick, we've all had the flu. I mean,
right.
That, you know, with the flu, we get over it and we move on. Well, when you have the flu all the time, it's just sick of being sick. And so I prayed to be out of it, but God didn't take me out of it. But what I think he did is give me the strength to be able to continue to move forward with it.
And as far as when you're thinking about pushing through this, how did it play out in your head when you found out that after those 5 years, it wasn't a one and done, that it was going to be a constant thing?
Yeah, that's a great question. I just knew that, you know, 5 years of interferon, okay, I'm off of it. And then it was like, oh my gosh, it's back. It's back in the exact same place. And almost immediately, I'm like, so those 5 years were for naught. I mean, nothing good came out of it because the cancer came back in the exact same spot. I guess it bought me time, for lack of a better word. But I always think back, and I'm going to tell you kind of a goofy story, but hang with me on this. So I remember reading about a professor at Johns Hopkins University back in the 1950s who did an experiment with rats. And it was a real simple experiment. He took rats and he put them in a tank of water that was over their head. And he wanted to see how long the average rat could tread water. And the average rat treaded water for about 15 minutes. And just as those rats were getting ready to sink and drown, he reached in, grabbed them, pulled them out, dried them off, and let them rest for a while. And then he put the exact same rats in that exact same tank of water. And the second time around, those rats treaded water, on average, for 60 hours. Now think about that. First time, 15 minutes. It's not like, hey, I started a business and it's going to fail. No, you're going to die. Your life is over. You're going to die. The second time, 60 hours, which said to me two things. Number one, the importance of hope in our lives, that we have to believe at some point in time, maybe not this week, maybe not this month, maybe not even this year, but at some point in time, our life will get better. Maybe that's when we die, but at some point in time, life will get better. Mm-hmm. And secondly, just how much more our physical bodies can handle than we ever given credit for. You know, I believe we all have that breaking point. I think that breaking point is so much farther down the road than we ever give ourselves credit for.
I agree. It's interesting because I had a note to ask you about the cows and the buffalo.
Yeah, that's kind of a good story. I'd never heard that story before. So, I mean, you know, here in Colorado, we have cows and we have buffalo. And it's all how you approach life. So those animals can sense when a storm is coming. And what the cows do is they try to outrun the storm. And the problem with that is they never really outrun it. The storm continues to batter them and beat them and all that kind of stuff. The buffalo is kind of different. The buffalo, yeah, the storm's coming. But instead of trying to outrun the storm, the buffalo run into the storm. And the idea behind that is the faster I get through the storm, the less trauma, the less damage I will have to myself, as opposed to the cows that, you know, they're just running with the storm is what it ends up being. And so, you know, all that rain, lightning, thunder, hail, whatever you want to, they just take the brunt of it for the entire length of the storm, whereas the buffalo turn and face the storm. You know, kind of the metaphor for we turn and we face our disease, we turn and we face our trauma and we run into it. So that, yeah, we're going to hurt. It's going to be hard, but we're going to be in it a whole lot less than the cows who run for the storm. And that storm may go on for several hours.
I totally, when I read that, I was like, I'm going to have you tell that story because it was so perfect for what we need to do in life. You want to run away because you're afraid.
Sure.
There's so much in front of you that you don't understand, you know, the fear of the unknown. When you turn that around and you face it, you take the power away. You are in control of that. You know, that's why I said this whole thing with what you've been through and the mindset that you have to persevere through something like this. This is where I look to you as somebody who inspires me to keep going, to be the buffalo.
Yeah, I guess in a way, thank you for that. I appreciate it. I mean that. I mean, if I can inspire people, if I can help people find that, but you know, you have the choice as to what you want to be. Do you want to be the cow or do you want to be the buffalo? You know, I want to try to outrun the storm. I want to get away. I'm afraid this, I'm scared. I get it. It takes tremendous courage to face your fears, especially when your fear could potentially be your mortality. Mm-hmm. And, you know, to face that and say, okay, you know, I have no control over, you know, my mortality. I remember when I had my, you know, my leg amputated and these tumors in my lungs, about 8 months later, my doctor showed me my CAT scan from that time. And I have no medical background. I don't know how to read a CAT scan, but I kind of was like, oh, that doesn't look like it's supposed to be there, you know, and things like that. And I had these big tumors in my lungs and I had fluid all around the pleural spaces of my lungs. And I remember looking at my oncologist and saying, how was I alive? Mm-hmm. And he kind of got this sort of smile on his face and shook his head. And he's like, I have no idea because you shouldn't have been. Which said to me that God's not done with me. You know, right. When I die, where I die, how I die, way above my pay grade. So don't spend a whole lot of time worrying about the dying part of it. I mean, that's the great thing about death. We all get it once. But
yes,
you know, why not spend more time living? What can I put back into this world with whatever time I have left? And then when it's my time to go, it's like, okay, time to go.
That brings me to this whole series of everybody that's going to be here on this series is going to be talking about their experiences and how they keep going and what has inspired them and the strength and the resilience that comes with this type of life, to go through a cancer diagnosis and to persevere. And I know you have four truths to leading a more resilient life. And these are really important to remember when you start getting to that part where you're questioning or you're having trouble staying focused. Could you share those with us?
Sure. I have them here on my desk. I've written them down on a post-it note, so I see them multiple times during the day and they constantly get reinforced in my mind. They're all just one sentence each. First one is, and we talked about this a little bit, control your mind or your mind is going to control you. The second one is embrace the pain and the difficulty that we all experience in life and use that pain and difficulty to make you a stronger and more determined individual. The third one I look at kind of as a legacy truth, for lack of a better term, and it's this. What you leave behind is what you weave in the hearts of other people. And the fourth one I think is pretty self-explanatory. As long as you don't quit, you can never be defeated. And I look at those four truths and I sort of call them the bedrock of my soul. They're just a good place to start to build a quality life off of.
I'm so thrilled that you're here today. And I have umpteen questions. And I wanted to talk a little bit more about the future you see for you and what do you have planned moving forward?
Yeah, that's a great question. I don't know. In all honesty, I wish I could answer that. I wish I could say, you know, I have these goals. I don't know, Lori, to be honest with you. I've started to have some cardiac issues that are related to my cancer treatment. My oncologist who I've been with for 10 years has decided to leave. And, you know, I mean, it's kind of like, wait a minute, you can't leave. I've been with you for 10 years. You've right. gotten me to this point. I'll hand you off to somebody else. Well, I don't know. I know who the other doctor is, but it's like, I don't have a relationship with that person. So it's like starting from ground zero. I'm on a clinical trial drug now that I've been on for 2.5 years that I started with other people. Unfortunately, those other people have died over the last couple of years. So I'm kind of the standard bearer now. I'm sort of, you know, picking up the flag and moving on, you know, trying to keep their memory alive and things like that. So I don't know what the future looks like. And, you know, sometimes I feel uncertain. You know, what am I going to do? You know, I have this positive mindset. I know I'm going to keep moving forward. But, you know, is this the year that it ends for me? Or do I have another year? And those are terrible thoughts to have because there's no answer to them. I'm not God. I don't know when I go. But, you know, I guess I'm just going to keep doing what I'm doing. And I'll be honest with you. I get up every morning and I say a prayer and it's like, look, is this what you want me to do? Is this direction you want me to go? Because if it's not, show me where you want me to go. But if it is, then I'll keep doing what you want me to do, which is to try to say that, hey, yeah, this is bad, but what can we learn from it? Mm-hmm. You know, what can we get from it? How can we help other people who are scared and, you know, who are nervous and who are worried that, you know, is this the end of my life? Is this, and it's not the dying. The important thing is the living. And I think that's what death teaches you. It's not about the dying. It's about the living. And the people who I've seen, you know, I was a police officer for a number of years. In these 11 years of having cancer, I've seen a lot of people die. I'm going to make a huge generalization now, but the people who seem to die what you and I would call happy or peaceful deaths seem to be the people that found their purposes in life and lived those purposes. Mm-hmm. Whereas the people who go kicking and screaming and, you know, want another day or another month or another year seem to be the people who never did anything with their life. They lived a casual life. And as a result, their goals, their dreams, their ambitions became a casualty of that unplanned living. So it's about the living. And I guess I want to do more living. And I don't know what that looks like yet, though.
Yeah, I I'm with you that you do everything you can to live the fullest. You take the lesson that you learned that day and apply it to the next day and do better if you can. Giving yourself a little break when you need it. But yeah, there's very little that you get to decide on some of this stuff. And then it all falls back in your own lap as to what your experience is. And yeah, if you're worried about dying or if you're worried about living.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember when I had the tumors in my lungs and I had my leg amputated, my doctor wanted to put me on chemotherapy. And I said to him, is it going to save my life? And he was like, probably not, but it might buy you some more time. And I was 8 years into this fight. And I was like, well, if the outcome's going to be the same, you know, if I'm going to die, whether I take chemotherapy or not, I'm not sure I want to do that. I'm not sure I want to go through all that ugliness to have the same ending. I said, but I'll go home and talk to my family. And it's just my wife and daughter and I. And I remember going home, and this is really kind of a funny story, but it really did happen this way. And so I was like, okay, you know, my doctor wants to put me on chemotherapy. My daughter's like, all right, we need a family meeting. I'm like, family meeting? There's three of us. It's not like we got a board here or something like that, you know. And so we end up sitting around the table, kitchen table, talking about individually how we feel about me having chemotherapy. And then my daughter's like, okay, let's take a vote. How many people want dad to have chemotherapy? And my wife and daughter raised their hand. I'm like, wait a minute. Am I getting outvoted?
Overruled.
Yes, exactly. Am I getting outvoted for something I don't want to do? But I remember when I was back in the police academy, our defensive tactics instructor used to have us bring a photograph of the people that we love the most to class. And as we were learning different techniques to defend ourselves, we were to look at that photograph because he reasoned you will fight harder for the people you love than you will fight for yourself. So I ended up taking chemotherapy, not because I wanted to, but because I love my family more than I love myself. And in hindsight, it was the right thing to do. It was the bridge that got me to the clinical trial drug that I've been on for the last 2.5 years.
Right. And that is something important to remember, too, is what is happening right now, what is available right now in a year or two or three could be totally different because research is always happening. The clinical trials, thanks to people like you who are putting themselves into this place to pave the way for future treatments. I mean, that's mind blowing that, you know, that there's that much out there, but it's really hard to see when you're in the middle of it.
It is. And you make a really good point about that because I am on a drug now that, yes, I am kind of the guinea pig. You know, what's its efficacy? Does it work? And what are its side effects? And, you know, the side effects for me are pretty bad, but it's kept my tumor stable for at least 18 months.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, you look at that and you say, well, okay, you know, am I going to go do this again? Am I going to get up? Because, I mean, to do it for an entire week, I remember talking to my study coordinator and I said, you know, this is great. I mean, look what it's done for me. And I said, are they going to move forward with it, seek FDA approval and things like that? She's like, no, not in the way it is. I said, well, why not? And she said, because people won't do what you do, Terry. People won't come every day for a week, every 3 weeks and go through the side effects. And Lori, the way I look at this, and I think I learned this from playing team sports. You know, I started playing basketball when I was 9 years old. And I played all the way up until I graduated from college.
Mm-hmm.
I think one thing that I learned being part of a team, and for me, it was team sports. I think it could be whatever, you know, your family team, your coworker, whatever it is in your life that you're part of with another group of people, is the importance of being part of something that's bigger than yourself. You know, you realize that on a team that if you don't do your job, not only do you let yourself down, but you let your teammates down, your coaches down, your fans down, et cetera. And if you think about it, the biggest team game that we all play is this game of life. And while this clinical trial drug most likely will not save my life, it may save the life of somebody 5 years from now, 10 years from now, based on the data that the doctors are gleaning from my blood tests and my scans.
Mm-hmm.
For me, that's a big reason why I go do this every time, because it might help somebody down the road. It's being part of something that's bigger than me that I potentially can leave behind when it's my time to go.
And that's why you're my inspiration right there.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you, Terry.
Thank you, Lori. Thanks for having me on.
I'm speechless right now. It's just, there's so many similarities to our stories and so many connections. It just, it's very real. So.
It is. I know.
So thank you for joining me today. And I'm so grateful to you in so many ways. And I hope everybody gets your message of hope because of everything you've been through and everything you're doing right now.
Well, Lori, you know, I mean, life is about the connections that we make with each other. And sometimes those connections are made in the ugliness and in the dark and the stinky and the smoky and all that kind of stuff. But I always remember this, no matter how bad life gets, no matter how dark life gets, it cannot in any way stop the light that we all have in our souls. So no matter how bad it gets, your light will find a way to shine through. And I appreciate your friendship and I appreciate you having me on.
What an incredible honor to have Terry back 100 episodes later. Terry's inspiring story of battling a rare form of cancer is a perfect example of how your mindset can help you push through even the toughest times. Despite being told that he had a low chance of survival, Terry did not let that negativity take over. Instead, he persevered. Terry's experience highlights that a positive mindset and a strong will to overcome adversity can go a long way. You can learn more about Terry at motivationalcheck.com. I'll also make sure that the links are in the episode description for his book, Sustainable Excellence, and also the link to our first conversation, episode 11 from 2021. If you or someone you care about would like to share their experience, or if you know an organization to help even just one person, message me through my website. Supporting this show allows us to continue to make a difference in someone's life. You can share this episode with friends and family and contribute financially. Just go to sailingthroughlifepodcast.com to become a part of the crew. Stay anchored. Chat with you next time.